are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com. The comments and opinions of the guests on Dishin' and Swishin' are not necessarily the views and opinions of the host of the show or the contributors and management of hoopfeed.com. The Dishin' and Swishin' podcast is meant for entertainment purposes only, and the inclusion on the podcast of any individual, entity, or institution is not to be considered an endorsement of any kind.
Hi, everybody. This is David Siegel, your host of the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast each week on Hoopfeed. It's just about time for the start of the WNBA season, and that means it's time for one of my favorite podcasts, the WNBA Roundtable, where we gather some of the best journalists around, and we kick around the topics and the teams that are going to be entertaining us this summer in the WNBA. So without any further discussion, let's get it started.
I am pleased to jump right into it tonight with some of the best people to discuss the WNBA. First, from ESPN, we have Michelle Vogel joining us again. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And the voice of the Indiana Fever television color broadcast and a person who we have seen all over the place during the NCAA season. It's great to have Debbie Antonelli back. Hi, Debbie.
Hey, David. Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
And continuing a returning veteran to the wars here, Christy Winter-Scott from the Washington Mystics commentary, our favorite Terp. How you doing, Christy?
Hi, David. I'm just fine. Hello, everybody.
And I am pleased to bring in a newbie to our group, a person that certainly is no stranger to all of you that have watched ESPN broadcasts of women's basketball over the years. But now, unfortunately, she's covering the Arizona Diamondbacks, unfortunately for us WNBA fans, but she will still have her hands in it, as you will find out. Cindy Brunson, welcome to Dishin' and Swishin's podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, and hello, everybody. I'm big fans of everybody that's on this podcast and, of course, a former colleague in Michelle Vogel, so this is really exciting for me. And even though I'm now in the state of Arizona, I am so excited to actually live in a city that has a WNBA team instead of having to drive, 40 minutes to Mohegan Sun to watch the Connecticut Sun like I had to do back at my old job. So this is just a thrill. And if it's all right with everybody, I'm just going to jump right in because I finally had an opportunity to attend a Mercury practice for the first time yesterday. And I'll just say it from the jump. The Phoenix Mercury are the Miami Heat of the WNBA. This team is gelling like no other. And it looks like they've already been in practice for 3 weeks instead of just a few days. Everybody looks comfortable with one another. And this was my first time seeing Brittany Griner run in practice, and it is jarring how effortlessly and with absolute athleticism and ease she dunks the basketball. I've seen it in snippets on, television broadcasts. I've seen it in drills at the Final Four. But to just see it continually, it is crazy impressive. And the chemistry she's already developed with Diana Taurasi is just off the charts. There was the injury note of Penny Taylor. She sat out practice, was only spectating and cheerleading from the sidelines with the left knee elevated and iced. The expectation from the team is that she will be available for opening day, but only for about 5 minutes of playing time. Maybe by the All-Star break, she'll be ready to go, 20 minutes a game or so, but it will be slow going for Penny Taylor at the beginning of the season. That was the only negative that I drew from practice yesterday.
Wow. Michelle, being out in Big 12 country, you certainly saw enough of Brittany in regular games, not just in the ones that we all saw on television and such. Cindy mentioned something that caught me right away. It was talking about how effortlessly she's been running the floor. Now, a lot of people were immediately jumping on the acquisition of Griner, the negative that they were looking at, saying, well, she's not going to be able to run in that system, that she's just going to start the outlet more times than not. Is this something that is just a fallacy, that she's going to be able to get up and down the court as much as everybody else on that team?
I mean, I thought all along she was going to be able to do that well. She takes up a lot of real estate, just, more so than most people with just one stride. And she's very athletic. She's very, you know, she's built more as a, I think, a post who can get up and down, more so than, you know, some of the, I would say most of the people that have been her height in women's college basketball before. So I thought it was a perfect fit all along with Phoenix. I never really had any question at all that she would fit in well there.
Hey, Debbie, staying with Phoenix for a second. One theme that I'm going to be harping on a lot this call is the new rules that have been put into place, because I think it's dangerous. The defensive 3 seconds and the move back 3-point line. But with Diana Taurasi, there's always never been no limitation to her range. So this 3-point line is something that goes right into her alley as she comes back.
I don't think the 3-point line moving back is going to really impact many players in the league, because I think they've all shot with range anyway. The thing, keeping along with the theme of Griner for a second, I'm looking forward to seeing if she can defend a screen. I mean, her entire career at Baylor, she has camped out. When you try to bring her out to run some screening action with her, she just gaps it up and she just plays in the middle of the paint. That defensive 3-second rule is the one that I'm excited about watching and seeing if Griner can actually defend a two-man game, because she's going to have to be able to do that. I mean, her length has always been able to help her recover on anything in the lane, but now the defensive 3-second rule is going to be really interesting. And there's never been a doubt that she could run the floor. I never thought for a second that she wouldn't be the number one pick and be where she is based on how the lottery came up. This is a wonderful opportunity and for Griner and for everybody to see her expand her game, because she does have areas that she can improve on both ends of the floor. The thing that I've been interested about Phoenix is every single thing I see that comes out of Phoenix is all about Griner, and I haven't heard anything about Taurasi, and I think Diana is just laying in the weeds.
She's laid in the weeds and she's burying three-pointers effortlessly. It was so fun to see her run in that offense yesterday. And in addition to Corey Gaines pulling Brittany aside and making sure that she was up to speed offensively and very comfortable with what they're trying to do, as soon as Corey would step aside, Diana would step alongside. Okay, are you sure you got this? What can I do to help you? She really wants to put Brittany in a position to succeed. And they spent more time on the defensive side of the basketball and running sets and getting Brittany very comfortable getting up around that 3-point line defensively and going with that full Michael Jordan-esque wingspan to interrupt the other team's pick and roll. It was really impressive. And at the end of practice, I saw Griner do something I'd never seen her do as a collegiate, and that was effortlessly shoot 17-foot jumpers from either baseline and from above the free throw line. It was awesome.
But there's certainly a lot of talent in the West. And the second team I'd like to quickly hit right now is last year's Western Conference champion that people seem to be overlooking, the Minnesota Lynx. Now, they went out and they made some moves themselves, which I think shake things up for their roster. You know, Taj is gone. The veteran is no longer there. But, you know, the wayward child returns in Janelle McCarville. And there is no denying that the chemistry that she and Waylon had all along through college and the friendship they've had is something that certainly can enhance the already incredible talent that is on that team. Christy, you know, Minnesota is not a team that these people should be overlooking, I don't think.
No, no question. And I think that Rebecca Brunson is a name that a lot of people fail to mention sometimes. When you think about Minnesota, it's Maya Moore, Waylon, and now McCarville coming back into the fold. But I think the X factor and the glue player for Minnesota has been Rebecca Brunson, and the way that she rebounds the ball and preserves possessions offensively and gets defensive stops on the boards for her team, I think has been a real key for their success as of late. And I think with McCarville back into the fold and back in the WNBA, I think it's great for her confidence, and Waylon with her chemistry with her, I think it's going to be special to see that work this year.
Sure.
Well, let's face it, Brunson has an awesome last name, right, in Rebecca? And I noticed during the WNBA Finals, as she got tired, it seemed like she was just spent. And that's how Indiana was able to take advantage. I thought Rebecca's play was critical to get them past the Sparks. And then when she just seemed to run out of gas, it was like the Fever really took advantage.
Yep. The other thing, too, about Minnesota, I think, David, is that not only that roster move of Taj that Christy was talking about, but Candace Wiggins also being traded over to Tulsa, because I think that's a good move for both franchises. Tulsa gets another experienced player that they need on the, in the backcourt to play along with Skyler. And I think it opens up more minutes for a very guard-heavy, perimeter-oriented team that without Taj, as great as she was, the pace of the play will change, and I think this will be a faster, more athletic Minnesota team if it can possibly be so.
I think that you're going to see more of Devereaux Peters in that mix, too, when it comes to post minutes this year. I think. Now, Michelle, letting you have the first chance to plug it, right? You just wrote a piece for ESPN.com with about Maya Moore. Let's talk for a second about what she's going to be bringing to the table this year. That the interesting thing I pulled from the article about her time in China was the way that she had to step up with her teammates and become more of a leader. I mean, we know about Simone being more of a quiet leader, and Taj was a vocal leader, but now Maya seems like she's ready to step in and be a little bit more in that leadership mode.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, she's just going to be 24 this summer in June. So she's really just getting into her peak years as an athlete. And I agree with you that leadership is something I think she's sort of born to do. Lindsay Whalen's a very good leader, too, but I think having Maya's voice even stronger, with Candace Wiggins gone, now it'll be interesting to see which shooters actually stick on this team, because they've got a lot of young guards in camp. The reason I picked Minnesota to win, which some people I know think that's crazy, that they think Phoenix, they've already got Phoenix in the finals, but it was because of Maya. I think Maya's going to have a huge season, and she obviously had a great season over in China. But I think she's really, I think she was really stung by not winning the title last year, and I think that's sort of that's going to fuel her all this summer.
You know, early on, have you heard anything or seen anything about how the rookie guard competition is starting to shake out? I mean, between Jamelos and Jeffrey, you know, Lindsay Moore, Rachel Jerry being over now, Sugar Rogers being in, you're right. There's a lot of young, talented players with very few roster spots.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be one of the tough calls that Cheryl Reeve, will have to make ultimately, because a lot of those players, I think, would have the capacity to step in and be good contributors, but it's really like who shows it, in this really, compressed time period, who's going to step forward and embrace that role and show it. That person doesn't have to hit a lot of shots, almost like, when Wiggins during their championship season, she didn't have to hit a lot of shots. It's when you hit them and how much of a threat you can pose. And I think if they get that, especially from some of their younger guards, I don't think they'll miss Wiggins.
I don't think they're going to miss her at all, Michelle. I think that's why I think it's a good move for both, for her to go to Tulsa and for them to have some extra space on the perimeter. You know, if you think about Minnesota, the reason why they lost the championship to Indiana wasn't because of their offense. It was because of their defense. They could not guard dribble penetration, and it really cost them in the transition game, and it cost them when the game slowed down and having to guard side to side. So they do need more quickness in the backcourt.
Yeah, and, what Debbie's saying is so exactly right. I talked to Taj McWilliams-Franklin during the college season, and she said that exact same thing. She said we did not guard anything like we needed to guard or like we could guard. And I think that was very, very evident, that god-awful game three where they just, Indiana just ran over the Lynx. It was almost surreal. So I think those are things that Cheryl Reeve's going to, pound home, just what Debbie said, the importance of being able to guard the way they're capable of guarding.
Debbie talking about defense is that's the underdog surprise of the year.
That's the only time you're going to hear me say it. I'm spending my time on offense, as you know.
That's it. Well, considering the way you feel about offense, let's talk about the fact that Lindsay Harding is now in Los Angeles. and she finally gives them the point guard that is actually a point guard. And that's just going to speed up what was already a pretty potent offense to begin with. Yes.
Yeah, the West is really, really tough with Phoenix and Minnesota, the two teams we talk about, and we're talking about L.A. third, you know, if you went down the list that way. I mean, I think Carol Ross did a terrific job last year, and Candace Parker coming off the EuroLeague MVP, or was it the Russian League MVP? I'm not sure. Which one did she win, Michelle?
I think it was the EuroLeague MVP.
Yeah. Parker, you know, we're all excited about Deladon at 6'5 and what she can do, but basically we've been watching it out of Parker for many years. That's a player. Candace Parker gets me excited about basketball, watching her play with all the things that she can do offensively, her length, her range, her ability to go off the bounce. I think Kristi Toliver is going to be more comfortable playing almost strictly the two. She doesn't have to bounce between the one and the two. And Harding is certainly a north and south point guard. And she can hit that 15-foot pull-up jump shot in transition. She's going to really do a good job of being a servant on the floor, pass the basketball, because that's what her job's going to be. Get it to the players that can score. And if you're the fourth or fifth option offensively, fine. But there's plenty of offense on that team, and they can really play in a very athletic tempo, which will be fun to watch.
Kristi, one question that I have about that team still, though, is there anybody that can really step up and play defense in the post?
Oh, I thought you were going to stay on the perimeter, and I was going to go with Elena Ford with how well she did last year. But it's going to be tough for them to match a player, well, any player, like Brittany Griner. But I think it's going to be a collective effort when it comes to their post defense. And with the change in the defense, I think you're going to see harder rotations to the ball from every position in L.A. So, I mean, Candace Parker does a good job defensively, but she's not the juggernaut in there. So I think it's going to be a collective team effort post-defensively for L.A.
Well, here's what I think L.A. is going to do. I think they're going to go to that matchup zone that Carol Ross became famous for in college. With a defensive three-second rule and teams trying to spread them out, because that was an issue, as you pointed out, David, I just think they're going to play more zone.
Yeah, I agree, and then let NECA crash the boards.
Yep.
We know Candace Parker can play defense. It's do they, and especially Parker. I love Parker. I think I agree with Debbie. I just can't tell you how excited I am when she's healthy through her whole season. But it's can Candace Parker not take possessions off defensively? Because I think she's done that at times. They do have the personnel to do it. It's really, you know, can Carol Ross get them to do that?
Now, they've got a rookie in camp that we've seen put out some impressive things, too, in Adia Mathis. She's going to bring some excitement to that team, too.
Look, Adia has gotten better every single year. Her freshman year, she didn't have three-point range. Now she can play in a two-man game. And that's why, you know, when I'm looking at these kids coming out of college, you know, have they been exposed to a system that will allow them to make that step to the WNBA on both ends of the floor with a two-man game? Because that's so important, be able to make plays off the bounce, which Adia can. She can get by any defender. And then, you know, do you know how to guard the screening action that comes with it? And I think Matthew Mitchell did an excellent job developing Adia's game every single year. I'm excited to see her play alongside Beard and Toliver and now Harding.
Now, once you're done with the first three in the West, I have a bit of a drop-off. Now, in San Antonio, unfortunately, it's due to the injury to Sophia Young. You can't take that out of their roster and expect things to not have a major impact. Tulsa seems to be on the upswing with some interesting things going on there. And Seattle is the one that you just got a feel for the storm crazies up there, missing both Jackson and Bird this season. You know, it's going to could make for a tough year there. So out of those three, who are we looking at as the one team that is going to have to make the playoffs? Because one of them does. Cindy, we'll start this with you.
Well, I don't see the Storm making it, bless their hearts. I mean, when you see more pictures on Instagram from Super post-surgery than you do her talking about basketball, that's never a good thing. And without Jackson there, that's just a tough road to hoe. I think it would be exciting for the league and kind of pay off that whole 3-C deal that ESPN ran with the top three draft choices for Tulsa to make it. Tulsa was in so many games, especially in the second half of last season, and was competing and was just two or three possessions away from really doing some damage and shocking some people. And with the roster shakeup, I think it would be awesome for the league if Tulsa made it.
Michelle, guys, I'm wondering when Becky Hammon's going to take her game and her talents to South Beach. I mean, when is she going to pull the LeBron?
Right.
I mean, Becky Hammon is a player that anybody who has ever picked up a basketball should appreciate, because she, from the minute I met her, she told me her dad taught her to control the ground. She's never going to play as a high flyer or somebody above the rim or close to the rim. She's probably not even at 9 feet. But she controls the ground, and she's so smart, so good in the two-man game. I mean, I tell my son Patrick, he's 11, we're watching Steph Curry. We're checking Steph Curry out every single night of the NBA playoffs. Every morning we check his stats, and I say the same things to him every morning. He's maybe 6'2", and he's maybe 180 pounds. Maybe my little Patrick will grow to be like that. The one thing that Curry has is he can flat out shoot it. And it doesn't matter what defense you play, and it doesn't matter how physical you are with him. He finds a way, and that's the way Becky Hammon is. I just wish she'd take her talents to South Beach. Go somewhere where she can win.
She'll look better. Right. She'll look better in the capri pants than Wade did.
Oh man!
Oh, you know, it's funny that you say the capri pants, because that's almost what happened to Griner, the Adidas shipment that came to the Mercury. The shorts weren't long enough; they had to bring in a tailor to extend them by a couple of inches.
That's funny.
You know, as long as we're talking about San Antonio. One of my favorite players that I think is just starting to get some ink now, and I also enjoy the point guards as much as I like the post inside, is Danielle Robinson, who seems to be improving every year.
So fun to watch.
And she is just a tremendous talent.
Well, I can start about D-Rob, because I think there's two players in college that I can recall in my 25 years being on the college side that can do this so well, and that is slice up the court and transition from left to right, right to left, with speed, push the ball out. That is Danielle Robinson and Kristy Tolliver. And they both are so good at running up the backside of a big in transition, meaning they're creating a mismatch in transition while they're pushing the basketball. If there's a big girl running the middle lane, D-Rob will run right up the backside of her, try to make her turn around and defend her. If that happens, she's got an immediate mismatch. If it doesn't, she blows by her all the way to the rim. I think she's smart. I think she's got great skill. I think she is a terrific teammate. Many Oklahoma games when she was playing, not only for the Big 12 Network, but also doing the Sooner Network games. And so I got to know D-Rob pretty well. She has got a huge heart. She's a teammate that anybody would like to play with, and she totally gets it. And playing alongside Becky Hammon has really extended Becky's scoring, because D-Rob is so quick and so fast with the basketball that gives Becky just that extra amount of space or separation that she needs to be able to make her plays.
I love watching Danielle Adams as well on that team. I mean, she looks like a person who maybe needs to hit the gym a little bit more and find some more weight training and whatnot, but she somehow finds a way with that body type to be devastatingly threatening from the outside. And it's a marvel. Every time I tune on the TV, I'm so impressed with what she can do physically on the basketball floor.
Yeah, you know, Becky Hammon's she turned 36 in March, and Debbie talked about, you know, wanting to see her win a championship. I would say right now she's the player, if you asked any WNBA fan who you most want to see get a title, I think everybody would say, or almost everybody would say, Becky Hammon. The thing,
oh, especially
so
now
weird,
that Tamika Catchings got hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that's so weird is that it's like Becky's been with, you know, two franchises that have been just good enough to not really win a championship, you know, and they're at their best. New York was just good enough to not win, and at, you know, their best season in 2008, San Antonio was just good enough to not be able to win a championship. And so you wonder, unfortunately, if the window's closing on her, because they're not going to win it this year. If Sophia Young comes back healthy, depending on, you know how else the personnel can be upgraded. I mean, obviously they need upgrades in a couple of different areas. How much time does Becky Hammon have left to win a championship? And I think it was a great relief for everybody, other than, you know, maybe Minnesota Lynx fans, that Tamika Catchings and Katie Douglas won last year, because
right,
you wanted to see that for them. They were 33 last year, so they're a little bit younger than Becky, but you know, just these players that have meant so much to women's college basketball and now the WNBA, you do root for him. You do want him to win. I don't know if Becky's going to be in that situation before her time runs out.
Well, Dan Hughes has been known as such a considerate guy, nice guy. So it was nice that he went out and got Delisha Milton Jones so that Becky and she could go to the early birds together when they're on the road.
Well, I was going to say, well, Delisha Milton Jones is sort of, I guess she's sort of an inspiration to Becky that, you know, hey, you're still young at 36. So, I don't know. I'm beginning to think Delisha Milton Jones might, you know, she might be in the league when she's 50. You know, it just doesn't seem like she's ever going to stop.
So hard every game. She's one of those players that doesn't take any time off. That's for sure.
Right.
Now, continuing on, though, touching base on those other teams that we were discussing, Christy, you have had the fun benefit of being able to watch the Seattle Storm's number one draft choice up close and personal. So Ms. Hawkins has certainly been impressive in the last year, the way she upgraded her game in Maryland. So let's talk about her transition to the WNBA.
Well, you know, she had a great showing in their exhibition game against L.A. where they won by 1 point. And I think the upside with Tiana is amazing. And I think that she's going to do a good job. And this is the furthest that she's been away from home. And the support system at Maryland has been so great. I had a function over in Columbia this past weekend with the Terps and the boosters and everything, and they're going to send some coaches, you know, just to go out and support her and see her. And I think it's just great to have that kind of support, not just from your family but from your coaching staff. And I think it's just awesome for her to get that opportunity. And I know that she was on the list for Washington to draft her, but the pieces just have to fall in place. And with the acquisition of Quanitra Hollingsworth, who won't join the team until later in the summer, and the pickup of also Kia Vaughn, I think that changed some things for the Mystics. But in terms of Tiana, I think that, you know, she worked herself to a great position this past season and throughout her career. I mean, she came in pretty much unheralded as a high school recruit, and she got the baby fat off her freshman year and just continued to plug away and grind. And it's paid off for her to be the sixth overall pick to Seattle. And it's I understand that the injuries are what they are with Jackson being out and Bird being out, but I think it's going to really present a good opportunity for her to get some valuable playing time during the game. And she did that in the exhibition game, and I think she showed well.
One of the Storm fans was kidding around with me, or maybe they weren't kidding around, saying this is God's way of making Brian Agler play Shekinah Strickland and Tiana Hawkins as young players, since we know how he has his tendencies towards veterans.
Right.
I think the Storm can just treat it like the Mercury did last season, where you let other members of the team step up and get a lot better, like Dewana Bonner, like Sharday Houston. Houston, you won't recognize this year. She lost almost 30 pounds from last season. She is quicker. She is faster. Samantha Perhalis is now a blonde. She looks like she just got off a beach in L.A. for PK, but she is dogged and determined and brings that same fierceness that she brought out from Ohio State when she was a little more goth looking. But so there's a new look, but again, another person that benefited from the injuries that were ravaging the roster to get a lot of tremendous playing time. So I think that that's something that the Storm fans can look forward to, is really getting a good look and seeing exactly what they have for when the pieces come back together and the championship caliber team that they'll have down the road.
That will be determined, I think, when you see the final makeup of the roster, because there are a lot of veterans in camp too. People like Noel Quinn, Nakia Sanford, you know, it's along with a lot of the youngsters. Now, if you see a team that is veteran-laden, then it means that Brian's going to still try and do something. But, I mean, there's certainly opportunities for people. Chelsea Poppins is a player that I know that he was high on and very happy to see available when he got to take that draft choice. And as we mentioned, the other two in particular as well. Now, moving over to the final team in the West, Debbie, we got the Wiggy and Diggy show going on in Tulsa this year. So, you know, Glory Johnson was a great addition last year, as was Raquena Williams. They certainly seem to be working in the right direction. You know, the team has certainly made the right moves, it seems, so far.
Well, I know Gary Kloppenberg well from his time at Indiana, and he's a heck of a coach. I mean, he will put them in the right position to be able to be successful. Skylar only knows winning, and I think she will, that attitude and that work ethic will permeate the rest. Not that they didn't have a work ethic before, but they certainly didn't have that winning culture. And I think because most of the players have come from winning programs, some of them haven't, but the ones that have understand what it takes and the work ethic that comes with it, and I think Skylar will just only enhance all that.
So, Debbie, and now the latest news comes in out of nowhere. When everybody was all upset that Liz Cambage decided not to come over, now she turns around and she is coming over, and that's got to be great news for the Shock.
Well, it is, David. It's great news for the Shock. It's great news for the WNBA because we get another premier player that's going to spend the summer over here. With her size around all that quickness in the backcourt and Skylar Diggins having a target that she can go inside to, I'm glad that she was medically cleared to be able to play and she decided that she wanted to come over. And that's a big body that will be interesting to see how she and Griner match up. You know, Griner, of course, with Phoenix, and those are two big 6'8 players. That both are very skilled. And I thought Cambage had a terrific Olympics. You know, last time we saw her was playing against the United States. And, you know, she had a dominant half. Then United States shut her down. But what a great, just great for the league. It's great for Tulsa. And it continues to be the theme as to why I think they're going to be one of the more improved teams in the league.
Now, Liz also played in the same Chinese league that Maya Moore we talked about. Tore things up, and we discussed the fact with Michelle that Maya had the language barriers that helped, in her opinion, make her become a better leader. But the question is, that league is not comparatively strong talent-wise. So, you know, the question then becomes with Liz, do we think that she's developed into a 40-minute-a-game player as opposed to the half-game player we saw in the Olympics?
I don't think she can be a 40-minute-a-game player because I just don't think that body can run and play the tempo that is going to need to be played on both ends of the floor because of her size. And if she has dropped some weight and she comes up back and she looks great and can give Gary Kloppenberg maybe, you know, 25, 27 minutes, I think that'd be fantastic because you can build around her. You could do a lot of fun things with her on the defensive end and utilize her in a similar way to Griner. Of course, they're not the same kind of athlete. They're a different kind of basketball player, but still, with that kind of size and with Gary's background and ability to manipulate and change up his defense, I think it's going to be fun to watch how Tulsa grows this year. I'm looking forward to seeing them being probably the most improved team. Now, it's tough because it's in the West, so when you got to play, you know, Phoenix and L.A. and Minnesota three or four times, that's challenging, but I think we'll see significant improvement out of them, and I think they'll all be a year wiser, and Skylar will certainly be the glue that pulls it all together, and I love the fact that she started her WNBA career with stitches. I think that is foreshadowing for the toughness that she's going to display all year and how she's going to help elevate the Tulsa franchise.
You know, Michelle, this was a team that at the end of last year did some good things and really was moving in the right direction. You know, then they let go the starting backcourt, which accounted for a great deal of offense in Johnson and Latta. So is this a team that's going to continue to make steps forward this year off of those 9 wins last year and make a run at that playoff spot, in your opinion?
Yes, I think so, and I'm not just saying that because they're the closest to me, and so I'd really love it if they were actually a good team, although that helps. It is interesting because I thought, you know, Ivory Latta had the best season of her WNBA career, and I was really happy for her because I think that enthusiasm she brings, that she's brought back when Debbie, you know, coined a little of this, or what was it, a little of this and a lot of that.
A little of this and a lot of that.
she that kid is so genuine with that. That's all the time. And so I was sort of sad to see her go because I think she gave her heart and soul to Tulsa, but you knew, you know, that they had to make that place for Diggins to come into. And I think, you know, when we talk about the East, I think Latta's going to be a big factor for the Mystics. But I think they're going to be okay in the backcourt. And the other player I'm interested to see how well she comes back this season is Tiffany Jackson-Jones. She was out last season on maternity leave, and two seasons ago she was really, you know, in a tough season when Tulsa wasn't very good. She was really the most consistent performer. And so with more talent around her, she's still, you know, just, I think she's 28. I think, you know, Tiffany could really be a good addition to this team this year.
I think this is the other team that makes the playoffs out of the West. I agree with Michelle. When you asked that question earlier, I think Tulsa is the fourth team that comes out of the West for the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And with Tiffany Jackson-Jones, she'll be at the level where she was contributing almost 9 rebounds a night before the maternity leave. I think she'll crash the boards and give them some depth. I really like what Tulsa is doing.
And we can see how Nicole Powell does, because she's been a streaky shooter all her WNBA career. When she shoots well, she's a good offensive player. So we'll see what she can contribute. And the other thing, anybody who's been to Tulsa, it would be so nice for those fans, because those folks, the last 3 years, there have been some diehards there that they'll be down by 25 points and the team will do something good in the fourth quarter and those fans will be on their feet. I mean, they really, that core group that supported the Shock, I think they'll show up. And if this team's good and in the playoffs, I think that'll be a very, very nice home court showing, you know, for the fans. I think people will really get behind it. And also, when it's 150,000 degrees in Tulsa, that's a nice place to be, the BOK Center, especially if the team's good.
Well, Christy, you remember back in the day when the Mystics were like that, when the franchise first started, they'd be down by 20 in the fourth quarter and they're doing the wave. They didn't care. You know, they were having such a great time.
Yes, absolutely. It was a lot of fun, have a packed house and the excitement. And, you know, hopefully the Mystics can get back to that. It was better the last couple of years, even though the record wasn't there. But the fan support has always been strong and they're excited for this season.
Before we head there, I wanted to ask Debbie one thing. You had mentioned earlier on when we were talking about the Lynx how you thought it was a good trade for both teams with Wiggins. So now on the Tulsa side of things, let's talk about Candace Wiggins. Why do you think that was a good trade for Tulsa to have Candace Wiggins?
I think she's a shooter, and I think because she's a great shooter, the quickness in the backcourt that Tulsa has with Diggins and with Raquana Williams. You know, I'm anxious to see Raquana Williams. I think she could be a key. I agree with Michelle. Nicole Powell, a key, a 6'2 player who can shoot it, who can play in the two-man game, which is so much a part of the offense. I think Wiggins will benefit from having a different role, more of an expectation role, not so much. And whether she comes off the bench or whether she starts, I think her role will be different. I think they will expect more from her. I just thought Minnesota had so many players that were similar. And if you rated them the way I rated them, I would not have had her at the top. I would have had her at the bottom of their perimeter players. But I think this moves her to the top, which automatically changes your mentality. And if she and Skylar are as tight as has been reported and the friendship that they have built over the years, then I think that will be a lot of fun to watch. And then somebody like, if Raquana gets hot, Raquana can get a shot for herself or for anybody anytime she wants. That's the kind of quickness that Michelle was referring to that Tulsa had that helped them win late. I had them late when they were playing in Indiana before the season was, you know, the playoffs were pretty much determined and they were playing Tulsa towards the last week of the regular season, and you would have not known that this is a Tulsa team that had only won a few games. I mean, they definitely played well when the pressure was off. The pressure's off them this year. I think Gary Kloppenburg, having had another year, or his first year, his maiden voyage as a head coach in the league, I think this is going to, all these pieces are going to come together, and that's why I think it was a good trade. Wiggins ends up there with a different elevated role and a different mindset, and I think that will make her a better player. And then there's plenty of players around them to make them all better, including the impact that Skylar will have immediately on that team.
And when the Shock play the Silver Stars, if somebody could do me a favor and set up a drill where we put Raquana Bebe Williams on the baseline with the basketball alongside D-Rob and clock them and see who is faster, I think that would be almost as entertaining as the game itself.
Well, I'll tell you, you're not going to find too many passes in those two. Absolutely correct. I mean, that's a great, great success.